Chapter 4. His friend the editor turned to him squarely. Illy took me into consultation, and since he seems to have let you in, I may just as well tell you what is up. I shall try to be as short as I can, but in confidence mind. He waited. Renard, his uneasiness growing on him unreasonably, assented by a nod, and the other lost no time in beginning. Professor Moorsom, physicist and philosopher, fine head of white hair, to judge from the photographs, plenty of brains in the head to all these famous books, surely even Renard would know. ... Renard muttered moodily that it wasn't his sort of reading, and his friend hastened to assure him earnestly that neither was it his sort except as a matter of business and duty, for the literary page of that newspaper which was his property and the pride of his life, the only literary newspaper in the Antipodes, could not ignore the fashionable philosopher of the age. Not that anybody read Moorsom at the Antipodes, but everybody had heard of him. Women, children, dock laborers, cabmen. The only person, besides himself, who had read Moorsom, as far as he knew, was old Dunster, who used to call himself a Moorsomian, or was it Moorsomite, years and years ago, long before Moorsom had worked himself up into the great swell he was now, in every way. Socially too. Quite the fashion in the highest world. Renard listened with profoundly concealed attention. Charlatan, he muttered languidly. Well, no. I should say not. I shouldn't wonder, though, if most of his writing had been done with his tongue in his cheek. Of course. That's to be expected. I tell you what. The only really honest writing is to be found in newspapers, and nowhere else, and don't you forget it. The editor paused with a basilisk stare till Renard had conceded a casual dare say, and only then went on to explain that old Dunster, during his European tour, had been made rather a lion of in London, where he stayed with the Moorsoms. He meant the father and the girl. The professor had been a widower for a long time. She doesn't look just a girl, muttered Renard. The other agreed. Very likely not. Had been playing the London hostess to tip-top people ever since she put her hair up, probably. I don't expect to see any girlish bloom on her when I do have the privilege, he continued. Those people are staying with the Dunsters, incog. In a manner, you understand, something like royalties. They don't deceive anybody, but they want to be left to themselves. We have even kept them out of the paper to oblige old Dunster. But we shall put your arrival in our local celebrity. Heavens! Yes. Mr. G. Renard, the explorer, whose indomitable energy, etc., and who is now working for the prosperity of our country in another way on his Malata plantation. And, by the by, how's the silk plant flourishing? Yes. Did you bring any fiber? Schooner full. I see. To be transshipped to Liverpool for experimental manufacture, eh? Eminent capitalists at home very much interested, aren't they? They are. A silence fell. Then the editor uttered slowly, who will be a rich man someday? Renard's face did not betray his opinion of that confident prophecy. He didn't say anything till his friend suggested in the same meditative voice, you ought to interest Moorsom in the affair too, since Willie has let you in. A philosopher. I suppose he isn't above making a bit of money. And he may be clever at it for all you know. I have a notion that he's a fairly practical old cove. Anyhow, and here the tone of the speaker took on a tinge of respect, he has made philosophy pay. Renard raised his eyes, repressed an impulse to jump up, and got out of the armchair slowly. Tea isn't perhaps a bad idea, he said. L.L. have to call there in any case. He wondered whether he had managed to keep his voice steady, its tone unconcerned enough, for his emotion was strong, though it had nothing to do with the business aspect of this suggestion. He moved in the room in vague preparation for departure, when he heard a soft laugh. He spun about quickly with a frown, but the editor was not laughing at him. He was chuckling across the big desk at the wall. A preliminary of some speech for which Renard, recalled to himself, waited silent and mistrustful. No. He would never guess. No one would ever guess what these people are after. Willie's eyes bulged out when he came to me with the tale. They always do, remarked Renard with disgust. He's stupid. He was startled. And so was I, after he told me. It's a search party. They are out looking for a man. Willie's soft hearts enlisted in the cause. Renard repeated. Looking for a man. He sat down suddenly, as if on purpose to stare. Did Willie come to you to borrow the lantern? He asked sarcastically, and got up again for no apparent reason. What lantern? Snapped the puzzled editor, and his face darkened with suspicion. You, Renard, are always alluding to things that aren't clear to me. If you were in politics, I, as a party journalist, wouldn't trust you further than I could see you. Not an inch further. You are such a sophisticated beggar. Listen. The man is the man Miss Morsom was engaged to for a year. He couldn't have been a nobody, anyhow. But he doesn't seem to have been very wise. Hard luck for the young lady. He spoke with feeling. It was clear that what he had to tell appealed to his sentiment. Yet, as an experienced man of the world, he marked his amused wonder. Young man of good family and connections, going everywhere, yet not merely a man about town, but with a foot in the two big F's. Renard lounging aimlessly in the room turned round. And he, what the devil's that? He asked faintly. Why, fashion and finance, explained the editor. That's how I call it. There are the three R's at the bottom of the social edifice, and the two F's on the top. See? Ha! Ha! Excellent. Ha. Ha. Renard laughed with stony eyes. And you proceed from one set to the other in this democratic age, the editor went on with unperturbed complacency. That is if you are clever enough. The only danger is in being too clever. And I think something of the sort happened here. That swell I am speaking of got himself into a mess. Apparently a very ugly mess of a financial character. You will understand that Willie did not go into details with me. They were not imparted to him with very great abundance either. But a bad mess, something of the criminal order. Of course he was innocent. But he had to quit all the same. Ha! Ha! Renard laughed again abruptly, staring as before. Oh, there's one more big F in the tale. What do you mean? Inquired the editor quickly, with an air, as if his patent were being infringed. I mean fool. No. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. Well, let him be a scoundrel then. What the devil do I care? But hold on. You haven't heard the end of the story. Renard, his hat on his head already, sat down with the disdainful smile of a man who had discounted the moral of the story. Still he sat down and the editor swung his revolving chair right round. He was full of unction. Imprudent, I should say. In many ways money is as dangerous to handle as gunpowder. You can't be too careful either, as to who you are working with. Anyhow, there was a mighty flashy burst up, a sensation, and his familiar haunts knew him no more. But before he vanished he went to see Miss Morsom. That very fact argues for his innocence, don't it? What was said between them no man knows, unless the professor had the confidence from his daughter. There couldn't have been much to say. There was nothing for it, but to let him go, was there? For the affair had got into the papers. And perhaps the kindest thing would have been to forget him. Anyway, the easiest. Forgiveness would have been more difficult, I fancy, for a young lady of spirit and position drawn into an ugly affair like that. Any ordinary young lady, I mean. Well, the fellow asked nothing better than to be forgotten, only he didn't find it easy to do so himself, because he would write home now and then. Not to any of his friends, though. He had no near relations. The professor had been his guardian. No, the poor devil wrote now, and then to an old retired butler of his late father, somewhere in the country, forbidding him at the same time, to let anyone know of his whereabouts. so that worthy old ass would go up and dodge about the Moorsums' townhouse, perhaps waylay Miss Moorsum's maid, and then would write to Master Arthur that the young lady looked well and happy, or some such cheerful intelligence. I dare say he wanted to be forgotten, but I shouldn't think he was much cheered by the news. What would you say? Reynard, his legs stretched out and his chin on his breast, said nothing. A sensation which was not curiosity, but rather a vague nervous anxiety, distinctly unpleasant, like a mysterious symptom of some malady, prevented him from getting up and going away. Mixed feelings, the editor opined. Any fellows out here receive news from home with mixed feelings. But what will his feelings be when he hears what I am going to tell you now? For we know he has not heard yet. 6 months ago a city clerk, just a common drudge of finance, gets himself convicted of a common embezzlement or something of that kind. Then seeing he's in for a long sentence, he thinks of making his conscience comfortable, and makes a clean breast of an old story of tampered with, or else suppressed, documents, a story which clears altogether the honesty of a ruined gentleman. That embezzling fellow was in a position to know, having been employed by the firm before the smash. There was no doubt about the character being cleared, but where the cleared man was nobody could tell. Another sensation in society. And then Miss Moorsum says, he will come back to claim me, and I'll marry him. Apostrophe apostrophe, but he didn't come back. Between you and me, I don't think he was much wanted except by Miss Moorsum. I imagine she's used to have her own way. She grew impatient, and declared that, if she knew where the man was, she would go to him. But all that could be got out of the old butler was that the last envelope bore the postmark of our beautiful city, and that this was the only address of Master Arthur that he ever had. That and no more. In fact, the fellow was at his last gasp with a bad heart. Miss Moorsum wasn't allowed to see him. As he had gone herself into the country to learn what she could, but as he had to stay downstairs while the old chap's wife went up to the invalid. She brought down the scrap of intelligence I've told you of. He was already too far gone to be cross-examined on it, and that very night he died. He didn't leave behind him much to go by, did he? Our Willie hinted to me that there had been pretty stormy days in the professor's house, but here they are. I have a notion she isn't the kind of everyday young lady who may be permitted to gallop about the world all by herself, eh? Well, I think it rather fine of her, but I quite understand that the professor needed all his philosophy under the circumstances. She is his only child now and brilliant, what? Willie positively spluttered trying to describe her to me, and I could see directly you came in that you had an uncommon experience. Reynard, with an irritated gesture, tilted his hat more forward on his eyes, as though he were bored. The editor went on with the remark that to be sure neither he, Reynard, nor yet Willie were much used to meet girls of that remarkable superiority. Willie, when learning business with a firm in London, years before, had seen none but boarding house society, he guessed. As to himself in the good old days, when he trod the glorious flags of Fleet Street, he neither had access to, nor yet would have cared for the swells. Nothing interested him then, but parliamentary politics and the oratory of the House of Commons. He paid to this not very distant past the tribute of a tender, reminiscent smile, and returned to his first idea that for a society girl her action was rather fine. All the same, the professor could not be very pleased. The fellow, if he was as pure as a lily now, was just about as devoid of the goods of the earth. And there were misfortunes, however undeserved, which damaged a man's standing permanently. On the other hand, it was difficult to oppose cynically a noble impulse, not to speak of the great love at the root of it. Ah, love. And then the lady was quite capable of going off by herself. She was of age, as he had money of her own, plenty of pluck too. Moorsum must have concluded that it was more truly paternal, more prudent too, and generally safer all round, to let himself be dragged into this chase. The aunt came along for the same reasons. It was given out at home as a trip round the world of the usual kind. Renauer had risen and remained standing with his heart beating, unstrangely affected by this tale, robbed as it was of all glamour by the prosaic personality of the narrator. The editor added, "I've been asked to help in the search, you know." Renauer muttered something about an appointment, and went out into the street. His inborn sanity could not defend him from a misty creeping jealousy. He thought that obviously no man of that sort could be worthy of such a woman's devoted fidelity. Renauer, however, had lived long enough to reflect that a man's activities, his views, and even his ideas may be very inferior to his character, and moved by a delicate consideration for that splendid girl, he tried to think out for the man a character of inward excellence and outward gifts, some extraordinary seduction. But in vain. Fresh from months of solitude, and from days at sea, her splendor presented itself to him absolutely unconquerable in its perfection, unless by her own folly. It was easier to suspect her of this than to imagine in the man qualities which would be worthy of her. Easier and less degrading. Because folly may be generous could be nothing else but generosity in her. Whereas to imagine her subjugated by something common was intolerable. Because of the force of the physical impression he had received from her personality, and such impressions are the real origins of the deepest movements of our soul, this conception of her was even inconceivable. But no Prince Charming has ever lived out of a fairy tale. He doesn't walk the worlds of fashion and finance, and with a stumbling gait at that. Generosity. Yes. It was her generosity. But this generosity was altogether regal in its splendor, almost absurd in its lavishness, or, perhaps, divine. In the evening, on board his schooner, sitting on the rail, his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.